Hi there, and welcome to the Women in What We Do podcast. I'm Mary Brucker, your host, and I am so excited to share our next guest. Today, I could not be more excited to have our next guest, Ms. Lisa Sabecki, who has truly lived a life of service for all of us, really. When I talk about strong women and people that I want to be more like, Lisa, you come to top of mind. Your spirit, your energy, and your willingness to fight for others is just beautiful. So thank you and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. And I'm just so happy to be here with you, Mary, and that you think of me like that.
I do. And I think that you don't realize how many people also think of you like that. You know, there's not a lot of people in my life that truly have dedicated their entire being to the service of others. And that has to come from somewhere, right? Like, have you always been this mission-driven, I don't want to say outspoken, because that sounds like not a compliment, but for me, it is a compliment. But where does this this grit and drive come from, Lisa?
Well, I think it really comes from my upbringing and where I kind of started life at. Came from a dad that was a municipal judge in a very, very small town back at home, and living with four other sisters in a small bathroom that we had spirited debates on who got to use a curling iron and the aqua net first.
Okay, so you've been battling with women for...
Yes.
Strong women.
It's just, you know, I always want to give back to my community and lift others up and give them a voice sometimes in spaces they don't feel quite comfortable with their voice. So.
And why is that? Like, was your voice taken away? Were you given a more powerful stance? Like, how does someone become Lisa Sabecki?
Grew up with four other sisters in the bathroom with a lot of Aquanet and a blow dryer curling iron with only two plugs.
Oh, my gosh.
But I really don't know where that kind of drives, that the drive is from. It's just that it could be living with four other sisters and wanting to be heard in that household. But then venturing out and wanting to be at the table. And, you know, yesterday, as we're taping, was a 50th anniversary for women, the opportunity to be able to have a mortgage, a credit card, just have their independence-ness when they're giving back.
Right. So just 50 years ago.
Just 50 years
ago. I mean, that's
ago.
Really crazy to think about. And that is your fight, right? To give those voices to people who may not be heard. So,
or feel comfortable being heard.
Right.
I think back at a time when I was serving in the military and some tragedy, some would say, happened to be. I kind of look at having going through being raped and in my home, you know, being forced in my home by knife point for multiple hours. And I had people that surrounded me that said, you know, don't say anything, don't do anything. But it's like I felt the need to be able to be that voice for others and stand up behind that and have others feel what I went through, but what so many other people have been through.
Where does that strength come from?
Deep inside.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder.
Right.
You know, 30-some years later, I, you know, get up in the morning and there could be a trigger or something, and I just look in the mirror, is like, who is that person there that survived that, that stood up for that, that was very boisterous of that? And I'm like, man, she's a pretty cool person. And I want to be her.
Yeah, you are her. I want to be her, too. I mean, that takes an enormous amount of strength to be able to do that. And there are people all over this country that don't have that strength, that don't have that voice, that are silenced, right?
They are, but the other side is that's part of my recovery as being a survivor, also is speaking out about it. And for those that don't handle it that way, everyone handles everything different in life that's thrown at them. This is just how I handle that, is continuing to tell the story and continue to tell it for so many other women and so many other women that didn't survive to be able to tell the story.
Right. And what are you doing now in that field to help with that? I mean, your career goes back a long time, right? Yeah. Like you served in the Navy
as the first damage firefighter instructor in the United States Navy. That the time that I was serving was when women, there was a lot of conversations around women serving in the combatant fields and going on, say, a submarine or going on a aircraft carrier or a destroyer. At that time, women are only allowed to go on tenders, and those are your supply ships that go out and supply the troops. That's all that we could do. But I was in that conversation time, and I remember when I was getting my next duty station, when I was stationed in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and they were going to send me overseas to the front lines to be teaching people about chemical, biological, radiological warfare. And the day before I was getting ready to leave, my warrant officer called me into the office. And I was like, oh, great, what did I do today? I'm almost out of here after spending 3.5 years in Cuba. And he said, oh, by the way, we're going to change your duty station because we figured out you're a female. I was like, well, I've known that my whole entire life.
you just figured that out?
Just figured that out. My personnel file has it all in there.
Are you kidding me?
No. And so I was, my duty station was changed to be on the, from the front lines of Desert Storm to being over in, going stateside into Charleston, South Carolina as a first female firefighter instructor, as an enlisted person. And that was huge. And I was going into another office that I was the only female there. And often when I would be instructing in front of the class, it would be with sailors that are getting ready to go on their med crew. So this is part of the requirement to get damage control, firefighting, chemical, biological, radiological warfare instruction done. It's what we call, you go and train in the gas chamber. And I'd often have gentlemen in the classroom that would be like, oh, I've done this a million times. Oh, she's a female. What does she know about? We're in an OBA, is an oxygen breathing apparatus. And I was like, well, I'm your instructor. I know a lot about it. I'm going to help teach you. And then when they wouldn't want to listen, and because they've been through it many times, when we go do it, when we would take the classroom instruction out on the field, I had an admiral, Rear Admiral at the time, that decided he was going to leave the classroom instruction, showed up on the field the next day and made him the number one nozzleman, because I was like, oh, you know it all? Great. You're up front and center. And he was being dragged out of that burning building that we had because he didn't participate in class. And I was the one that got to drag him out and had to administer CPR because he had been overtaken by a lot of smoke and stuff. And came to, and he's like, oh, guys, great, thanks for helping me. And the guys are all standing around going, ooh, this is not going to be good.
Yeah.
And he finds out who got him out. But from that instance, though, that whole destroyer was not able to leave on time to go do their med cruise because they had to retake the whole class, including that.
With your instruction, I hope?
With my instruction.
And everybody listened probably the next time?
Everyone showed up on time, on task, and on their mission.
Right. So I would think that would be tough back then, right? Like to be strong enough. You know, so many of us women kind of bear down to not think that we can hold up to these men's standards. And I'm not bashing men. I'm just saying women, we sometimes don't feel like we could go to the head of the class. What made you feel like you could go to the head of the class?
Well, that was my duty.
Yeah,
that's what I was told in the military that I was going to get to do. I took it seriously, like every job that I've ever taken in my life, I've taken very seriously. I did keep my head down, but at the same time, kept my head up. The head down, people didn't see a lot of times. You keep it inside, but I was also determined because I'm stubborn. Again, I had four other sisters.
Right.
And that's probably some of my faults. People say I'm a pretty stubborn person, but I say that's a strength.
I agree. But are you stubborn because you feel still the need to prove yourself, or like what makes you stubborn?
It's exactly that, is proving mm-hmm. that just because I'm a woman, I can't do it. I always say to people, don't tell me what I can't do. I'll tell you what I can't do. I'm going to show you what I can do. And if I can't do something, I will be the first to say I cannot do that.
Right.
If you're going to ask me to walk over some burning glass, I'm probably going to say, I can't do that.
Man, woman.
Right. You go first. Yeah. Let me know how that works out for you.
Exactly.
And then I'll say I can't do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So after the military, where did life take you?
Life took me to Toledo. It brought me here. I'm not originally from him. I'm originally from Missouri, a little farm girl that born and raised on the farm, get up at 3:30, 4:30 in the morning, go milk the cows, go to school, come home, milk some more cows. First job being a hay hauler. My dad gave me two trucks because my older sister was the hay hauler of the family. And when she went to college, he said, here's two trucks. And go get your crew. And by the way, you're getting paid 2.5 cents a bell. Those guys are going to get paid 5 cents a bell. At that time, I didn't know to challenge my dad to say, why isn't this right? So I managed two trucks, 10 guys.
At how old?
At 13. Could barely, you know, touch the gas pedal and the brake and the clutch. Well, I don't even know if kids know how to drive a
Six shift. I don't think so.
But, I mean, I really, that was also trying times, though, because the guys would like to throw in maybe a dead snake or mouse at your lap as you're driving the vehicle. But then we would come to the barn, and the guys would be tired and hot, and they'd been out there in the heat and stuff. And I would say, well, I'll go in the barn. I'll take the bells off of the conveyor belt, bringing it up, or I'll stack it or what have you. So I was never scared. And they're like, going, well, you can't do this. You're not strong. And I'm like, sit down.
I'll tell you what I can and can't do.
I'll tell you what I can and can't do. Watch me. But it was a great exercise program. You can right. lose lots of weight.
So you've always had that grit.
Always the grit and the grind.
So you come to Toledo in what year?
Came to Toledo in 1996, like okay. June 30th on my birthday. And it was warm and fireworks are going off and things are all great and wonderful. Lived with my mother-in-law and father-in-law for a couple of months till we found a house. And actually, my husband's from Toledo, so it was really a coming home opportunity for him. And this is where we started our family.
So what kind of job did you get into when you first got here?
When I first came here, I worked for Midas downtown, the franchise that they have. I was worked with the comptroller as comptroller's secretary. When my boys were born, my husband and I decided at that point that I was going to be a stay-at-home mom and raise them while he worked and loved every minute of it. I had my own music together business, which I don't have anymore, but I had that for about 3 years and had to fold that when my mother had stage 4 colon cancer and was given 6 months to live. So did a lot of traveling back at home to be with her, so I didn't feel I was right. But got involved with the schools and started off bringing cupcakes in and to my kids' classroom. And next thing I know, I'm being asked to be the PTO president. Next thing I know, once you run for school board, it's only one meeting a month. And little did I know that, yeah, you have one meeting a month, but you have a lot of other events to go to. But enjoyed that. I felt that gave us an opportunity to really, I could be part of the problem or be part of the solution. And that's kind of where I've always landed, is that it would be easy to come and complain at school board meetings or be part of that solution. So I was proud to run, first time I'd ever been on the ballot for myself. But through that, though, it was the same time that Toledo Public Schools was building 44 new buildings and renovating two 100-year-old right. schools. And I served on the committee that did that for the whole full 8 years I was in there and really learned a lot about construction. I feel like now I can maybe build a house, not. But
contract.
Yeah. But it was exciting to see what goes into all that and listening to the community and how they wanted to have their schools and what they wanted to have in. That was a really good turning point, I believe, for the school district, but also a good turning point for the city of Toledo.
And also you.
Yeah.
Because it kind of evolved from there, right?
Absolutely. Worked for about 10 years as I was on the school board, worked for 10 years on Jobs and Family Services as a caseworker. So listening there on the other end of the phone or for a client that was in front of me of the needs that they needed and why they needed them. And everyone's life is different. That's one thing I've really learned as being an elected official or just being an adult is that everyone has a story and everybody's story is different. And just helping people to navigate through sometimes some very cumbersome roadblocks.
Right. And it takes a special person to be able to, especially as vocal as you are, like having these jobs where literally you have to listen before you speak. Not always a gift for many people, but that has turned into a lifelong career for you, right? Because after that, what happened?
It has been. And I try to remember the 90-10 rule. 90% of listening, 10% talking, but sometimes I have to say to myself, shut up, you're talking 90% of the time and listening 10% of the time. We all like to talk. But
or we all like to be heard.
We all like to be heard. When I came off the school board, I chose not to run that third term, and it's okay. You know, and I just spend time with my boys. I call it practice what you preach. My boys were starting to go through high school, and I always said to parents is that it's easy to be when your kids are in elementary, middle school, to be there with them, but the time you need to be there with them and listening and observing is in high school.
Right.
So if I'm going to tell everyone else to do that, I felt that I needed to do that as well. So I wanted to spend some time with them. They gave up a lot for me to be able to do what I'm doing as a mom to support me, but is being there for them in those very impressionable high school years. High school's fun, you know. It can be the funnest times, but it can also be the times that they really shape where you're going to go in
right.
the future.
Yeah, especially now.
Once they got done and on their way out of high school and going in what we all call air quotes, adulting.
Yeah.
At 18, you know, the 18th birthday, all of a sudden you're an adult.
Yes,
you know.
Right.
I ran for the state house and served some time there. Under some insane, crazy times in the state of Ohio, we had a pandemic. There was the speaker of our house there getting charged with the biggest corruption in the state of Ohio, really in the nation, going through that time frame. But the pandemic really, really was a strange time, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, that's right. And how to navigate through that. And we look towards our elected officials to just tell us, what do we do? So we all kind of learn that together. And now you're currently serving as one of the Lucas County commissioners, which is an incredible role and voice that we need in the community. You know, when I think of, or I think when a lot of people think of politics, you go, why would somebody get into that field? And I guess that's my question to you is, like, why would anybody want to be in politics today, especially a woman?
I say, why not? Politics is messy sometimes, but relationships are messy sometimes. I enjoy really working for people, not people working for me. I enjoy being able to help someone navigate through, you know, difficult, challenging things. I enjoy listening. I get it wrong. I will say sometimes I've got things wrong. But I do my decision making based off of multiple pieces of information, listening to a lot of people, again, the 90-10 rule. But is that it's sometimes taxing. There's some days I'm not going to fib. There's some days I go, what in the devil have I done here now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough. Or when you see citizens struggling, it's a you wear a lot of weight on your shoulders. And there'll be nights I can't sleep because I know I have a community that is struggling. How can I fix that? It's like my brain just can't shut off at night at 11 or 12 o'clock at night. It's how can I help this? How can I help this? But then it's when you do, you see people and you're able to help them and the joy on their face. It could be their first home. It could be getting their unemployment. It could be getting their food stamps on their case so they can feed their family. And then when you see them out in public and they're like, thank you.
Right.
I'll tell you, a lot of times you don't get that.
Yes.
But there's people in communities always tell you what you've done wrong versus what some of the things you've done right. So I always try to always, you know, thank people for the work they do. It's thankless. It's thankless. But there's a lot of thanking.
Yeah.
It goes on.
You know, it may be publicly thankless, but you were born for this. I mean, this is obviously your purpose because of the many years you've, you know, served others. You know, I think to be the first woman in your role in the service, to go through the trauma that you've obviously had to deal with, and then still to lead with such compassion and grace. How does somebody do that, Lisa?
You surround yourself with good people. But there's also times that a lot of people don't know. I cry, mm-hmm. You know? Women can't cry in public sometimes because it's viewed as a weakness. But sometimes you cry.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you just sit in your car and you just shout. Right. Get it all out.
And that's okay, right?
And that's absolutely okay. It's absolutely okay. But then you go put the lipstick back on. You put that smile on. And you get out there and just grind and do that work. And sometimes you hide it deeply, though, sometimes. But that's, you know, it's navigating through it. But I always say, surround yourself with good, positive people.
And I think some of the tone of a lot of these podcasts, it's amazing. We just talked to a lady who said, it's hard to just self-love, right? Like, it's hard, like people say, oh, you got to love yourself first. You got to love yourself first. That's hard for some of us who care so deeply to do. And I think you're right. I think the key is to surround yourself with people who challenge you, lift you up, believe in you, and encourage you. And you are that human for so many people in our community, Lisa. And I am so blessed to call you our representative. I'm so blessed to call you my friend. And I'm so excited to see what the next chapter of your life is going to look like, because I know it is going to be absolutely amazing for yourself and definitely for others.
Well, I thank you for those words. And if your viewers could see now, I've got tears in my eyes. Another thing I don't do well is take compliments very well, because I don't look for those. Just want to do the work and serve the people. And by the way, electeds are humans too. Mm-hmm. We're all humans too. And so if there's one takeaway, is that people remember that we put on our shoes and our pants and our stockings all the same way as everybody else does. And we have bad days too, but we also have very good days too. But I thank you, Mary. You're amazing too. You're amazing in our community. You're always got a smile on your face, but I know sometimes it's not always easy. We just put that lipstick on and keep moving.
That's right.
Yep.
And that's going to be the title of our podcast. Put the lipstick on and just keep moving, because we're women and that's what we do, which is the whole reason why this podcast exists, is to truly tell the stories of, you were running a crew at 13. You were the first. I'm so amazed and so grateful that you share your life with us, with the community. And I think you're an exceptional human. Thank you for being on my show. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Living a life of service or politics is not for the faint of heart, as you could see from the stories of my guest, Lisa Sobecki. But I think it's a great reminder to realize that they're human too. A huge takeaway for me is the 90-10 rule, where you listen 90% and talk 10. Most of us could really learn a lot from this. And a good cry is okay. Just wipe off those tears, reapply your lipstick, and go out smiling. We've got this. I want to thank again my amazing guest, Commissioner Lisa Sobecki, for coming in and sharing her vulnerable stories. To my awesome producer, Chris Pfeiffer, and especially to you, the listeners, who tune in to hear these amazing stories of women in our community. If you want to hear more stories of these women, please tune in to WGTE.org/whatwedo or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And remember, we all have a story, so speak up. We do.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.